Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Next guest was born in the Liberties area of Dublin in the late 1930s, would you believe? He's father to 8 children, including 2 of the most talented people in the country's ever produced. Maybe more of them, we'll talk about that. And he's also one of the star guests at the upcoming Liberties Festival, which happens next week in Dublin City. Sean O'Connor, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Oliver. I can hardly recognise myself in that description.
Ah, you should. But
can I mention at the start that apart from being the star guest, the bigger star will be a fellow writer, Sheila O'Flanagan.
Yeah, of course.
Sheila is right in the middle of a big success on her latest novel, The Honeymoon Affair. And we're both to be interviewed by Michael McDermott to give the festival a start on Monday
evening. The Liberties Festival.
7 o'clock, the Liberties Festival.
Come here, our whole team have been talking about you since you've come in this morning. God. And between Mary, John and Susan have met you, they're going, oh, he must be lying about the age. You're a very fresh looking man. Can I ask politely what age you are?
I'm 87.
You look
Last Friday.
I would put you early 70s.
Well, it's because
someone even said
of the sweet nature of my dear wife Viola and my kids, who never, ever gave out to me much.
Also, you've been a fit man all your life.
I have. I was very fond of athletics, and I did those at championship level, and I did the first marathon, and I kept fit. I'm 22 years retired.
Go away.
And sure, what else could I do? It's either trying to drink or trying to fitness.
Well, you started working very early too.
I did. I left school under compulsion from the beautiful Francis Street CBS, Franner as it's called.
Is that what the nickname for it was?
Franner. Oh, Franner. Well, it still is. And in my book, I refer to the title Franner as in a chapter where I recall the wonderful work of the teacher we had, who was one T.T.O. the Van, Brother Thomas Timothy the Van. Well, the Van was from Kerry. He was a chap who taught you ethics without you realising you were being taught.
Very clever.
And my favourite story about him is that he was writing on the board one day, 63 kids in the class.
Wow.
63. Every range of intelligence, as you can imagine, Oliver. Anyway, he turns around to the board and he says to us, now, boys, you'll see a woman, you see a girl coming in just when the mass begins. She'll have high heels, she'll be wearing lipstick. And that isn't right behaviour. So we all went to ourselves, of course, it's not right behaviour. But a few minutes later, more writing, then he turns around and he says, you know, boys, I may have been making a mistake about that girl. I was uncharitable and maybe she was looking after her mother for all I know. And all of us, me included.
The subtle feminism he was trying to induce into you.
He actually brought to life a feeling that there are two sides to a story. Mm. And what happened was, 25 years ago, Oliver, there was a big row about the Christian Brothers and how bad they were and how they beat kids up. But this guy never beat anybody up. I had him every year in the primary school range, you know, from first class to sixth class. And he was a man who, in the way that I'm explaining, he managed to get across the values in life that mattered.
Right.
Well, of course, in the end, it all ended badly for me because getting back to the reference to starting work early, I was in the scholarship class. Oh, I was a bright boy.
You were bright and you were spotted.
I was going very well when he told me one day, unfortunately, now John, he says, Sean, he says, you're going to be 14, you're going to be 13 in July. And the cut-off date for the scholarship is that you shouldn't be 13 before the 1st of September. So unfortunately, you'll have to leave the class.
And what was this was to get into another...
This was a scholarship to get into Belvedere College.
Belvedere.
Or else into Sing Street.
Right.
So...
You just narrowly missed out on private school.
I narrowly missed out, but I was left at 13 and a half with my way to find the world. Now, my father was a carpenter and was inclined to come in covered in dust, sawdust.
Yeah.
And I made up my mind that the sweet life was for me. The girls worked in an office, Oliver.
You're getting into an office, you said.
And I was getting into an office.
And you did it.
So I waited till an ad came you know, the usual junior needed for a busy city office. And that was me. And I wrote out my references, which were brilliant, and I wrote the application swearing the fealty of whoever you like yourself, swore my life away that I would be loyal, trustworthy, decent, and wouldn't cost them too much. So I got 22 and six a week. I got the job. The first thing the guy said to me when I went in...
Did you become a structural engineer through working, and also they educated you as well?
They, yes, they did.
Your first job.
That's right, Oliver.
As a teenager?
Sorry?
As a teenager you were?
I was 13. On the 1st of January 1951, I had to say I was 15 because that was the legal age.
Now, that caused
certain problems, because when I came to be insured and I was 15, the girl in the office, who was not sweet to me, said, bring in your birth certificate till I insure you. And I said, I certainly will, but I couldn't because I was only 14. And then when eventually she called me bluff, I had to say to her, well, in fact, I made a mistake about my age. And she said, what? You know, Oliver. And he's told, like, I want some more. What? You forgot your own age? Anyway, I got on there well in the office of Joseph Mala. And he had a partner called Maddock. And other assistants were Ruddock and Brewitt and Socket, real names. And they were all from Trinity, and they were gentlemen and gentle. And he saw this urchin from the Liberties.
Were you treated differently because you were the street urchin?
I was treated as if I didn't know anything. They could hardly understand my accent. You know, I spoke differently then, and it wasn't my fault. Anyway.
They
would correct my grammar.
Oh, would they?
It's not yous, it's ye or you. You can cover the plural.
Yous wasn't allowed.
Yeah, yous.
All of you.
Yeah, and skibble. School was pronounced in the Liberties with a B in the middle of it. Skibble.
You know? Yeah.
But you know, in Francis Street School, I had the most wonderful time. That brother, when they were being harassed in the papers 25 years ago, mm-hmm. I wrote to the Times, the Irish Times, about him. And I told that story.
You told about the good ones.
About the good ones, and about that story, the abuses were true, of course, but
your experience. And what's notable about your memoir, by the way, which was published 12 years ago, at a time when there was quite a lot of literature about miserable Irish childhoods, is that you came from a place which is associated with a lot of deprivation in that period,
yes.
And kids with no shoes and so on. You portray a very happy growing up around the Liberties in a very happy community.
Well, they are a very happy community. The poverty was never mentioned in the Liberties. You were poor, or you had a job. You know, if you didn't have a job, I'm talking now on the historic aspect before my time, the whole creation of the Liberties is misunderstood by a lot of people. But if you didn't have a job, it was a case of moving out of your room or rooms up to what was we called number one James Street, or the Union, the South Dublin Union, where they would house you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a billion James's hospital there now, but it wasn't always like that. Before my time, you have to understand that the Liberties had a history of deprivation, but 12 bottles of stout would create a party.
Yeah, okay.
You wouldn't believe it. Yeah. I mean, on a Saturday night, these people invented living in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow didn't exist.
That's the spirit always.
Yeah, yes. You see, the Liberties have a DNA created by the fact that the Liberties themselves started in the 12th century.
Yeah.
The king appointed a certain bunch of priests to be in charge of the Liberties. The Liberties were outside the city walls. They were, the military and the police were inside the city walls.
Yeah.
Outside, this fellow, who was a friend of the king, got possession, or the priest in the first place, till the Reformation in 1550, when Henry decided, goodbye, I'll put in the Earl of Meath, Lord Brabazon.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who was put in charge of the Liberties was in charge of tax collection.
I see.
Refuse removal.
Yeah.
Law had rights to hang, you know, the whole thing.
They were outsiders, and also you didn't have to pay a tax, was it? You could escape the tax. Is that where the Liberties word comes from?
No, the Liberties comes, to me, it comes from the idea of being liberated from the laws of the city.
I see, I get you.
The city ended in Lamb's Alley, just parallel to Francis Street, behind where I was born. And the city was, let's say, under control. But outside the city, the dirty industries and the dirty people and the Vikings and the Huguenots and Cromwell's army, they all came and mixed in the liberties, and they all disappeared into, if you like, an amalgamation, intermarriage with the locals.
And it created that kind of liberties mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it's still there?
Oh, absolutely. It's because it's in their DNA.
Yes.
You know what I mean? The way it was, they had to deal with hardship and deprivation, as you say, but they learned to deal with it by dealing with it on a day-to-day basis.
Jumping back to your fitness, because it was a poor place, but you certainly didn't go hungry. Is it true? Did you win an All-Ireland championship as a runner at 14 years of age?
I was the junior champion at 400 metres or 440 yards. It was under 18. And but that was many years ago. And I wrote it I mentioned it in the book.
You did.
Because I had been asked to cover the ground of my childhood, you know, to a certain age.
And you stayed fit all your life.
I love being fit.
That's why you look so well.
Well, thank you, Oliver. I feel that if people could just go easy on the smoking.
Right.
And if you could encourage your kids to keep off the drugs a bit. No, they're not all like that. They don't all smoke and so on.
No, but it's a problem we're all worried about.
But not being sanctimonious about it, but it'd be nicer for them later on if they did.
That's and coming from an 87-year-old who looked after himself.
Well, I didn't do it like I had my share of drinking wine. Mm-hmm. I retired 22 years ago and I just stopped.
You stopped at retirement.
I'm not sanctimonious about it. I don't want people. I buy wine for our home.
Yeah.
My wife Viola, my lovely wife Viola, whom I treasure, likes a glass of wine. And I like her to have it, but I don't.
What sort of exercise do you do these days?
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I do dumbbells. Tuesday and
strength,
Thursday,
yeah,
upper body.
Get your muscles.
Yeah. Most joggers forget about the upper body.
Okay.
Tuesday and Thursday, I do Pilates.
Oh,
on Saturday, I walk from my home in Rathmines to my old stamping ground in Francis Street.
Oh, go away.
Every Saturday morning, you can find me in
that's 6 days.
Cafe shop there.
Of exercise.
Yeah, 6 days, but it doesn't take up much time, you know, and you have plenty of it when you're retired.
And you let yourself go on Sunday?
I rest on the Sabbath day.
That's good for the head too.
Oh yeah, you have to have the body catch up.
You were educated, very smart, very successful engineering business.
Yes.
And from the Liberties, you moved out to Glenageary.
Yes.
How many children in total were there in your life?
There were 8 children in my life. And when I was 20, I married the girl next door, a lovely girl that I thought would last forever. But unfortunately, it didn't. Mm. Mea culpa. And I had 4 children with Mary. She died, unfortunately, in a car crash more than 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And she was the mother of Joseph and Sinead and Emer and John. And then I met my present wife, as you say, Viola, 50 years ago. We're 50 years together this year.
Really?
And she had 3 children. Jane, who's Jane Souter, who's well known she's the professor of modern communications in DCU.
DCU, yeah.
Well known journalist. And Viola had Lisa and Kate. And we together, me and Viola, had Owen. So we're all together. We all still speak together. I'm very fond of them. I think love is indivisible, and I love them all.
A very modern family.
Well, it's a very liberties family because that's what happened. Okay. If you lost your kids when you were, your husband died and you had 4 kids, they arranged that you would marry somebody who had 2 themselves but were widowed. And that's a background in many of...
As you say, they just got on with it.
They just got on with it because you couldn't manage otherwise. A woman with children couldn't manage and a man with children couldn't manage. So they fixed up another marriage.
And as a writer, since you're being interviewed with your fellow writer, Sheila O'Flanagan, I gather Joseph has been a mentor to you.
Yes, he has been. Joe's a shining light in my life. But I have to be careful how I trod because I love them all equally.
Of course.
And Joe, like all creative people, has a mind of his own, not influenced by me. I feel the creative instinct is entirely self-possessed, you know, and that when people ask me about Jane Suter or any of them, I say, God made the world. And as they say in the Liberties, but I had to carry the bricks, you know. Okay. But in the meantime, don't look at me for being responsible for any of their abilities. But Joe is the eldest of them all.
Yeah,
and very dear to me, as everybody else is too.
He has a very similar voice to yours.
Has he?
I think so, yeah.
Well, I can't say much about that.
Okay. I'll vouch for it. Where did all the creative abilities come from? Because there's a lot of creativity through the families.
Well, Oliver, I don't know. It certainly, I wouldn't claim ownership. I just say, as I said, God made the world. It's an innate, natural thing. And when you see it in any child, you have to stand back and let it happen.
I heard in an interview you did some years ago that you weren't a pushy parent. In fact, you sort of believed the parents shouldn't be kind of even hovering around when the homework is being done.
Oh, I agree with that. What's the point in your mother doing your homework? You better just struggle on. Ah, yeah.
That's how you operated as a dad?
Yes, I never helped with any homework. And all eight of them can vouch for that.
You know, no issues
you
there.
You have to let them, you know, find their feet. And I find that the best thing you can do, in my situation anyway, was to listen and answer any questions you might be asked. But any attempt to tell a creative group like I have what to do is met with a rebuff.
We're approaching the second anniversary of poor Sinead's death next week, 26th of July, 2023 in London. Hard to believe still. She was only 56 years of age. The incredible outpouring for her. Was that any comfort to you, Sean?
Well, when Sinead passed, I cried my eyes out for a fortnight. I still miss her. And of course it's a comfort. But Sinead had two personas. One was in the public arena and the other was with her family. And I saw her funeral as being lovely for her, her fans. At a personal level, I've never had publicity in respect of Sinead. And it made it all the more hurtful for all of us when she died. You know, I visit her grave every week.
Do you?
I do. And we have a conversation or I bring her up to date. I put my hand on the gravestone, which was designed by my daughter, Emer. Mm-hmm. And it's very simple. It just says, Sinead O'Connor, two dates, born and died, and God is love. And that's it. It's more to do with her fans than the family. The family, it's in the heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very difficult as a dad.
Very difficult.
When the fame part was cruel to her in life, what could you do? What could you do as a father for your daughter?
You can't do anything except be there. I mean, Sinead could be outrageous in the public world and she could be outrageous in the family. You know, she could be cranky. But in the end, I always had a feeling of compassion for her. You know, she was always on the edge. We got on very well most of the time and sometimes she'd fall out with me. But it's a very great help for me to know that in the January 2 years ago, we were on the phone. We agreed we'd go to Wexford for a three night holiday. We did.
Together.
It was the greatest bit of gas. We went down to the hotel. We went in to check in two rooms, myself and Sinead. And we went off for a drive and we came back. I had been upgraded. I had a suite. A chocolate soda, a bunch of flowers. Jesus, you couldn't go anywhere with Sinead, but someone to come over the back of beyond in Wexford. Oh, Sinead, love, how are you? You know, I love that song of yours. So we had that, and we'd arranged to go away again in April. But when April came, she said she'd go to England instead. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see her again, other than when she came home from England. So it was a sad time. God. The strength of the family around me helped and I'm beginning to deal with it now.
Beginning to deal with it now?
Yeah.
2 years. the rest of it, like, you've portrayed such a lovely image of your close family and the friendships in, and the strong, the strength in there.
Yes, Oliver.
So they're all suffering.
Well, they all could as well. I mean, our family of siblings are quite united. I mean, they have the differences. But although they're from the different parentage to some extent, they were all brought up together. So there's Joe and the eldest, and Jane Souter, who's a professor in the ECU, as I mentioned, and Eimear, who's a director of the National Libraries in charge of collections. And Lisa, who's a brilliant person going through training for counselling.
Yeah.
Kate is very well known for her photographic expertise. And my son John is a public servant who's suffering from MS at the moment, unfortunately.
I'm sorry to hear.
But all in all, when we have a family get together, we can all turn up together. Yeah.
Very good. You're a great champion for your family.
Well, I hope so.
Can I ask about faith? Because Sinead had so much faith, didn't she? There was nearly not enough religion in the world for her. Do you have that belief? Do you have that faith as well?
Yeah, I believe in God. And I believe, I do my, I'm not sanctimonious, but as I get older, you think more about passing on and actually behaving in a certain way that's more related to Christianity, like caring for your neighbour a bit more. There's not enough love in the world, Oliver, you know, that's what you discover. So I heard it in Francis Street School that if you are talking to somebody, it's good, it's better if you leave them in the better frame of mind when the conversation is over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, going through business and so on, that life, you come across situations where God doesn't commit to it at all. It's mammon and there's a fight on business-wise, yeah. You know?
But you have to keep the message you learned in the Franner.
Yeah, I did. It's a Francis School. It's a lovely school. Even now, I'm very close to it. I visit it very often. And the ethical levels there, Conor Doyle is the principal and Catherine Cole is the secretary. They do no bullying. It's a Dash School opportunity.
Yes.
Every kind of child. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful mix of children. And I'm very happy to be part of it.
Very much part of the Liberties.
Yes.
It's great to have someone with such direct experience. There's a couple of messages in here for you, Sean. My mum was from the Liberties, born Patrick Street. Her memories of her childhood are wonderful to listen to. And as Sean says, they may have been poor, but they had to deal with the hardship. But they had wonderful times, a fantastic community. She loved the Baino.
The Baino.
The Baino as a child. What's the Baino?
The Baino is actually properly entitled the Children's Play Space, created by the Guinness family.
Oh, yeah.
Right outside St. Patrick's Park. It was basically a place where after hours of school, you could go there and you'd be given a cocoa and a bun.
It's like a homework club, isn't it? After
it was, you got a slate, an actual slate, yeah. Run by Guinnesses. You know, their Guinness had a huge
built housing and everything around the Guinnesses. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Patrick Street,
Ivy Trust.
But I think that was the Baino. It was a free for all for young children.
And Vivian says she still has family living in the Liberties, and they're the salt of the earth, true Dubliners, and the wit is off the charts.
Oh, indeed. Oh, the repartee can be great.
Hard to broadcast at times.
Yeah.
Great to hear fellow Liberties boy on the wireless. Creativity is part of our DNA. I became a designer and now lecturer at TU Dublin School of Art and Design. Looking forward to hearing Sean and Sheila next week. That's from Dr. Con Kennedy.
How about that?
The Liberties people are coming from everywhere. I'm joined this lovely man. Best of luck to him as always, is Jane in Blackwater. And someone just says, Sean O'Connor for president, up the Franner, from Dan.
Well, I must say that I was called back into Fanner originally 15 to 20 years ago. There's a module of primary school where you have to touch on the legacy of the school. And they wanted me to talk to the children and do a tour of the country, of the locality with the teacher. So I taught them the war cry of what they learned in school. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, what's that?
Well, it went like Follow them up. That's the way you win the cup. Up the field. That's the way you win the shield. Before the match was over, before the whistle blew, Oliver got the ball and up the wing he flew. And he passed it over to Michael, and Michael put it through. Another goal for Francis Street before the whistle blew. It's a rare old thing to pray for. It's a rare old thing to know. But all we know, there's going to be a row. It's enough to make me heart grow sad. We don't care whether we win or lose or draw. For all the heck we care. All we know, there's going to be a row, and it's good old Franner will be there.
Brilliant, fantastic.
That's the way it went.
You can sing. You can hold notes for sure. You've done singing lessons, I read.
Oh, yes, indeed.
In opera.
I sing bel canto.
You sing bel canto?
Oh, yes, bel canto. I can sing Caro mio ben. Caro mio ben, credi mio. Yes, I do.
You've never taken a minute off in your life, have you?
But it's actually a song I sing mostly at funerals now.
Oh, gosh.
And one of the sad things, Oliver, about my book was the calls I got from people who, the daughters of some of my classmates that I'd mentioned in the book, mm-hmm. to say that they'd passed on. There was one little boy there called Paddy Burton, and he was brilliant at telling stories. He had an unnaturally sweet voice for a Liberties boy. But he used to be given, in the annual school concert in the Myra Hall, Paddy had come out to a crowded audience dressed in the green and white of Francis Street School.
Yeah.
And the boys, the men in the school recognised a huge acclaim. But Paddy was telling a story. He told the story about the time he was to feed the child his parents had gone out. But the food, I tasted it. It was delicious. And I could not stop till I had eaten it all. Mummy and Daddy came in shortly afterwards, and when they saw what had happened, my father said, I was an unnatural son. Oh, it will rankle in my heart for ages.
It's the accent, isn't it?
Accent.
Uproarious.
Yeah.
Come here, since you tell us that you walk to the Liberties every Saturday.
Yes.
What is the heart of the beating essence of it today? Does it still have its essential character? What's it like?
Well, it hasn't got the original character, but it's still the Liberties, and you can only hope that it'll come back. Now, Francis Street has been fairly well decimated by the Zoe Flats, which runs from Thomas Street down to the market, which opened the people in the flats there. It'd be okay if they emptied into Francis Street, but no, the exit is into Lamb Alley behind
see,
it.
See, that's what you mean. Okay.
Then you have the marketplace itself, which was the hub of such activity. Great stuff in there. Nobody goes there now. Three-way fight as to who owns it.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Sheila Flanagan herself worked there, and I visited every day.
Oh, Sheila worked there?
Yeah, she did. Her family had a place there, a shop there, and I remember it. And it was right across the way from Mr. Honer. Mr. Honer sold chickens and rabbits. If you bought a rabbit, you'd take the rabbit down, cut off the head, cut off the feet, cut off the tail, and pull off the skin. There's your grazer. And if you bought a chicken off him, he would pluck it. And then he had a bowl of methylated spirits burning, which doesn't go up like petrol. It just has a low flame. And he would singe off the remaining white fuzz off the chicken by running it over.
Oh my God, you have stories coming. Like they're going to have a great time at
yes,
this festival.
Yes, we are.
Someone has put it beautifully for me here. Anne says, wonderful to listen to Sean O'Connor this morning. He has a wonderful outlook on life and a beautiful speaking voice and very wise with it. And a great singer, I can see. I can see where Sinead got it from. May she rest in peace. And wishing you health and happiness. It's from Anne in Galway. That comes from all of us, Sean. We can hear here.
Thank you.
The Liberties Festival in Dublin, it begins on Monday coming, 21st of July. Of course, Sean O'Connor will be there with Sheila Flanagan, as we've heard, with all the direct living experiences. TheLibertiesFestival.com. And I'm sure more people would love to know about the memoir which came out 12 years ago. It's called Growing Up So High. Brilliant title. Sean, thank you so much.
Wallflowers growing up so high. That's where it came from.
That's where it came from.
Yeah, the skipping song.
The tunes.
Yeah.
You'll have to sing at the festival. Thanks so much, Sean. Sean O'Connor.
Thank you very much.
Now, isn't that something that would give you a lift? You're never old. If that man is 87 years of age with that energy and outlook, none of us are old. Still some messages coming in for Sean. Sean O'Connor was phenomenal, whether singing, telling yarns or remembering the Liberties. At 87, he was incredible. Long may he live, says Eamon. Greetings from Auckland. Enjoying the interview with Sean O'Connor. I'm sure Sean was my neighbour when he lived, and he names the place, 1982. And that's from... we're going to ask some of the questions, I think, because I'll have a chat with Sean after it and come back to you, because there's a lot of Liberties memories and questions coming in. TheLibertiesFestival.com is the business for today.